When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello, and welcome to the Cookbook Circle podcast. I'm Victoria.
And I'm Hannah.
And simply put, we review cookbooks. We take one book for each episode and both cook a couple of dishes, then discuss what we liked, more likely what we didn't like, and give it a rating out of 5. Like all the best recipes, it's pretty simple.
And if you love what we do, we're now on Patreon. This means if you'd like to support us, your subscription will help cover the podcast costs from the books themselves, the ingredients of what we cook, and in return you'll get some fun stuff. To find out more, visit our website, thecookbookcircle.com, or you can find the link in our show notes. Thanks, friends. Now for the podcast. Victoria,
how are you?
I'm great. Life's good.
Yeah, it is good. I feel like you specifically have had a bit of a monumental life change in the past week. Well, not in the past week, but in, you know, since we last spoke to our lovely Cookbook Circle listeners.
The arrival of my...
I'm not talking about the Queen.
R.I.P. The arrival of my new little friend. Is that what we're talking about? He's currently at my feet.
Hannah's got a new boyfriend.
I got a dog. My dog is my boyfriend. Yeah. We won't get into that. I have a new dog.
I feel like Instagram followers might have, you know, you've soft launched him on Instagram.
I have. I gave him a little soft launch. So my dog is called Doug. I say that in a tentative way because every time I'm out walking him, people are like, oh, he's so cute. What's his name? And I say Doug and they say, Dog. So now he's being formally introduced but as Douglas to every stranger.
That's my dog, Douglas.
This is my dog, Sir Douglas Quinn. And he's, just the best thing ever. A little rescue from Bosnia or Bulgaria, unclear, but he's got an EU passport, so that's the most important thing.
Unlike me.
And he's the new producer on this show, basically, because he's just never leaves my side. He's currently at my feet.
He's going to nip your little feet when you say something reprehensible.
Yeah, if he hears me chat shit about Alice and Roman again, he's like, he's going to go for me.
You'll be pleased or saddened to know, dear Sir Clett, that it's the morning time and we are not doing an 8 p.m. record for this one, but they'll be back soon, I'm sure.
They will. What's going on with you?
Nothing. I don't have a new dog. I have a new king.
That's true. Well, we have been working on an exciting thing as well, you and I.
Yes. This has been really fun.
So much fun. We won't give too much away, but we've been working on our first recipe together.
Isn't that so fun?
I think it's more fun because we're like, I don't know, there's some kind of joy in us doing it separately and like having our little notes and then trying something new. And
it's really collaborative.
it's so collaborative and so organic, you know. But it's a real cookbook circle recipe. So we're doing that in partnership with an exciting company called Stolen Stitches. So there's more on that to come.
Yeah.
It's exciting.
And if anybody has any, if wants us to develop any recipes for them, like, we're available because we're having a great time. It's been really fun.
So fun. And the recipe that we've come up with is basically like a kind of combination of two recipes from two cookbooks that we love. So it's been, you know, we've got a bit of experience under our belts.
Yeah.
We know what we're like.
We love that shit. Anyway, do you have any fun foodie things apart from our brilliant recipe that we're just teasing and not talking about to tell us about?
Well, I haven't read them yet, but there's two really exciting books out that I'm going to pick up very soon, and maybe we both will and can talk about them on the podcast. But there's one from our old pal Jonathan Nunn, of Victuals fame. Vic is making a face. She loves that man.
I do.
You've got the love heart.
Yeah, I do. I really do. Like, I just, he can do no wrong in my eyes. And
he is excellent.
I don't think he's ever done wrong. And I just like to see him getting him and Victuals getting the recognition that they deserve.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's too earnest. Sorry. Who can I slag off? Quick.
So he's edited this book called London Feeds Itself. And I think it's 25 essays around 25 different buildings, structures and public amenities in the city. I think it's kind of like where, you know, real London food is, behind the kind of glitzy restaurants and Instagram famous places, the kind of interesting nooks and crannies where there's like very authentic food happening. And it just looks so good. It's a huge list of contributors. Claudia Roden's written an essay, Ruby Tando, Jeremy Corbyn,
yeah, amazing.
Oh, Jezza. So it just looks really, really good. I'm really excited about that. And I think anyone who is in London or likes London will probably really enjoy that.
Yeah, I think it's going to be brilliant. I might buy it actually for my upcoming holiday to read on the by the pool.
Oh, yeah. She's going to Ibiza. That's not it.
That's the wrong song, but it's a good effort.
I mashed up Vengabus with Ibiza. It's yay! She's going to Ibiza. And then the other book that sounds really exciting, if mysterious, is Rebecca May Johnson, who I think she contributes to Victuals sometimes as well, yes. Right? She's really talented food writer. She has a book out called Small Fires, not to be confused with Little Fires Everywhere,
which is novel. A great book
and TV Russell show, right?
Yes.
But yeah, so it's a this book is like a memoir. It says it like explores the kitchen as a source of knowledge and revelation or something. It's just like a genre busting book. I can't really get a grip on what it's about, but the reviews are really, really good.
Yeah.
She's an excellent writer, and I'm just really excited to read that. The subtitle is An Epic in the Kitchen. It just looks good.
Yeah, I'm excited about that one as well. It's not very long either, is it, from what I've seen?
No. There's a certain, like, it's, aside from cookbooks, it's a niche genre, like, books about food, right? You've got Kitchen Confidential, these books that we're talking about, memoirs like Stanley Tucci Taste or whatever, but kind of essay ones like Ruby Tando's Eat. But I just feel like it's not a very huge area.
No,
right?
I feel like that it's difficult, right? Like, you all know that we love Sweet Bitter, and I feel like that does like a food novel really well.
Yeah,
but it's otherwise quite difficult to do it. That one, what is that book that novel that everyone's reading at the moment? It's about a food critic that is also a murderer. What is that called? I have it on Audible. Please hold, caller. A Certain Hunger by Chelsea G. Summers.
Oh.
And I feel like that's got really good reviews. And I started listening to it on Audible, but this is going to make me sound like a real prude. But I feel like it's not the right book to read on audiobook. It's got a lot of... I think she's an American author, and it's read by an American, and I just feel like Americans saying the C word and other very serious, you know, and talking about and it's just not good in audiobook. I'm sure it's brilliant, right, you know, as a physical book. But it was just making me cringe a little bit when I was walking around pushing my son trying to listen to this book.
The C word doesn't come up that much in the book.
Yeah.
Jeez. Like, we're not ones to talk about swearing, but still. that's a lot. But!
Butter.
These are not the books we're talking about today.
No, they are not. We have got a baking book.
Baking book.
This is fun. This is our second baking book of season two, baby.
Baby. Yes.
We are talking about Nadia Hussein's Nadia Bakes. Woo!
Woo whoop.
National treasure, Nadia Hussein.
She's a babe. We love her.
She's a babe.
Loves colour, doesn't she, Nadia?
She does. Yeah, she's always wearing like a colourful hijab or something as well. Yeah. And like her clothes and the kitchen she films in is great, which I'm sure it's not her kitchen, but
beautiful. Her TV shows are a real, they just make you feel a bit warm and fuzzy. They're lovely, colourful, sunshiny. She's really happy. It's nice. It's feel good TV.
Oh, she's great. Should I tell you a little bit about Nadia?
Yes, please.
It is really going to be a tiny bit because there is so much Nadia content on the internet. Like
I'm a little bit surprised at that. Not that there should be, but there's, you know, people that we've not been able to find much about, like, you know, Mira Soda or someone like that. So, I don't know. Tell me why.
She has a really good PR. Otherwise, I think she's just a national, she just also works. Anyway, she's so accomplished. Like, I didn't quite realize how, I mean, I did, but I didn't realize how accomplished she is. So just before I start, I need to tell you all that this, this episode will contain spoilers for, Great British Bake Off season 6, which aired in 2015. So if you have not yet watched that, then please switch off now.
Or just forward a couple of minutes. Yeah. Don't switch off completely.
So she won season 6 of Bake Off. And I think 2015 and season 6 of Bake Off was peak Great British Bake Off, at least in the UK. Like, everyone was crazy about it. It was back when it was on Channel 4, I want to say. It must have been, yeah.
What season are we on now?
Oh, I don't know. Like, but maybe it was when it was on BBC, because she does all of her stuff with
on BBC.
I should have
known. We're on 13 now.
Yeah, I feel like it must have been on Channel 4.
It was on BBC until 2016. And then it started on Channel 4 in 2017.
Well, she was 2015, season 6.
Okay, so she's BBC. She's a nope, just keep going. I'm not going to make that joke.
No C words.
No.
So, I find her so fascinating as well. I always, if she's ever on like a podcast that I vaguely listen to, I'll always listen to it. I always like to hear her talking because she's so brilliant. Anyway, so she has 3 kids and a husband, and wouldn't you know it, she talks about them a lot, which I love.
Yeah, it's cute.
Yeah, it's very much her brand, I think, is this like family. Stay at home mom, like, really, you know, she talks about her parents a lot as well and her sisters, which I love. And she wanted to be a social worker, that's what she wanted to do. And I think it's fascinating because I listened to this, you know, Elizabeth Day's podcast, How to Fail.
Yeah.
And she was on that. And that's a really interesting insight into Nadia Hussein's just past. She talks about how she really wanted to be a social worker, and she went to school, then she did her A-levels and she got into uni at 18 or whatever. But her dad didn't let her go to uni because, she had to get married because she had an arranged marriage to her husband. And so it was like a big thing. And she was really upset. She'd worked really hard. She didn't go. But she decided not to go. She married her husband. They had, they've got three kids. And during her pregnancy with her third child, she went to uni to be at the Open University to be a social worker. And she talks on that podcast about how she studied so hard, like after the kids went to bed and all this stuff. And she talks about doing her exams, and she'd have breastfeeding breaks. She'd go out, her husband would be out there with their kid, and she would go, she was like so determined to do these exams. Jeez. And then she'd be baking on, like, as a stress relief. Like, it was a stress relief thing for her.
Yeah, yeah.
To bake. And then I think during this time, I guess, was when Bake Off started getting popular. And she talks on her website about how she'd like sit, that was her also her like tonic, was like watching cooking shows. And then she got into Great British Bake Off, which is obviously so chilled and relaxed. And her husband would like begrudgingly watch with her, and he was like, you could do this, and she was like, no. And then
she's like, I don't have time.
Yeah,
breastfeeding and exams and baking.
But he got her the application form.
Oh, cute.
During season 4, and she did it. And she's really, if you know anything about Nelly, she's really open about her like mental health struggles, how she has like an anxiety disorder. And she's very panicky. And she's like, so she talks on her website about how she said to her husband, like, fine, I'll apply, but you have to be with me when I fail and all this stuff. And, and you know, you have to pick up the pieces when I'm broken and all this stuff. And she didn't fail, obviously. She, but she talks about, like, it's amazing. She talks, so they lived in Leeds, up in Leeds. And she talks about how going to film Great British Bake Off, the first episode, was the first time she'd, like, been in a taxi on her own and been on the train on her own and been on the tube on her own and all that stuff.
God.
And she had to do it, and she was like, it was terrifying. She's like, I was sweating and all this stuff.
Jeez.
And obviously you go, I think the way that, well, before the pandemic and in previous seasons, you would just go every week, right? You'd have the week to prep and you go at the weekend to Great British Bake Off, to the tent. And so she's like, you know, every week I thought it was going to end, and it didn't. And then when I then she won, obviously. God. And she's quite, her like winning thing is quite famous, right? She's like, I'm never gonna say that I can't do anything again, I'm never gonna put boundaries on myself and all this stuff.
Amazing.
It's, she's amazing, like, and she still carries on talking about her anxiety, and she's like, I'm not cured of that, but you know, I'm doing what I love. And I you know, she talks about like, oh, I don't know if I can still call myself a stay-at-home mom, but I do, but I get to like live my dreams and all that stuff. So I just thought, she's just so great.
She just seems like a lovely person as well, doesn't she? A hard worker, a lovely person.
Since she won, she's just taken off. I think she's probably, and I think you would agree, the most successful Bake Off winner or contestant of all time.
I think that's probably fair in terms of like TV shows, numbers of books, things like that, kind of just exposure in general, right?
People know her, right? She,
yeah.
Whereas I don't know if they could name any, you know, the general public might not be able to name another contestant or winner.
Yeah, that's true.
I also read that her final of the Great British Bake Off, where she won, was the most watched TV show of 2015.
Oh, no way.
Like millions and millions, tens of millions of people watched that. So we were really at peak Bake Off then.
Yeah, well, we spoke about it in the last episode, didn't we? Where we think it's a bit, meh. I wonder what the figures are like now compared to that.
Yeah, I'd be interested to know. Yeah, I love her. She... So since then, she has done like just so much TV, so many books. She's actually just released a new book, right, in the past like week or so.
Yes.
Which is called Nadia's Everyday Bakes.
Yeah, love that.
So she's got 7 cookbooks, a biography, 3 fiction books about the Amir sisters. Yeah. And 4 children's books. And then... pretty much all of those cookbooks have got like a tie-in TV series.
Yes. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I don't know how people have the time.
No, I don't. I don't know. And she's got 3 children. They're still like young. Like, they're not like old, you know, they're not
Left home children. Old children. Those old children.
They need looking after. And she's got like various TV shows, right, where she like There was one where she went back to Bangladesh because that's where her family are from.
Yeah.
And there's one called like Nadia's Asian Odyssey, and there's like a British Odyssey. She's just...
The woman doesn't sleep.
She does not sleep, and she's so happy and
yeah,
brilliant. She, I love her.
It does make you think about a career in food, like to be a visible food person. Like we've spoken about, you know, Ravneet and people like that before as well. They work so hard.
They do.
Like you have to do so much. It's not an easy gig, I don't think.
And it's not an easy gig also, I think, to be like liked.
No.
Like it must be so hard. Like it must be so easy to be a bit of a dickhead, you know, to people. Like when you're just, when you've got to be creative and up early and making all this stuff and creating all these recipes and good on TV and nice to all the production staff.
Yeah.
Woman.
Yes, this is it. But she does always seem like she's lovely to her production staff. And you always see them like eating their food together on the TV show and stuff. It's just, yeah, she's a lovely person. Sorry, Doug just rolled over on his back like a little cockroach. And he's very cute. His balls are alarming me, though. They need to go. I'll cut that out. They're just so shiny and they just ruin every photo. I tried to take a nice photo and they're just there all the time. Sorry.
Men. Men. They're bloody shiny balls. Sick of them. Also, shout out to Nadia because she reminds me so much of my mother-in-law. Like, they are so similar. And I don't know if that's the reason that I like
Nadia
so much. Like, but they are so similar.
Oh.
And just like their energy and like the way that they talk about their cooking and their, like, my mother-in-law is so modest and sweet and just caring, and they're so similar. And I think that's another reason that I like watching Nadia on TV, is because it just reminds me of like my husband's family, and it's so nice.
Definitely think you have the same, you know, tone and facial expression when you talk about both of them, which is like a very cute one.
This book, though, Nadia Bakes.
Yes, yes.
September 2020 was her first baking book. Interestingly, of like, I think this might be her fifth cookbook since she won Bake Off. And this was her first baking book. I guess the other ones had
elements.
Sweet recipes in it, baking recipes in it, but this one was the first all baking. She talks about like how in this book, like, this is what she loves, right? This is her original fave. And it's a lovely book. What did you think about the book?
Well, you very kindly bought me this book last year, I think.
Oh, I
or
did.
Maybe it was the year before. I still have your note in here somewhere. So I've had it for a while and it is beautiful. I think what excites me most about Nadia is that, or this book, let's say, is the interesting combinations and the like kind of messing with the classics and trying to make them more fun. I think, you know, that's what was slightly missing for me in Ravneet's book, and which is what I'd love to see in Sugar I Love You. I still haven't looked at that, but it's just, you kind of know a lot of the classics, but it's fun to just kind of mess with them now.
Yes.
Right, like, so she has a quiche, but the base is like a potato rosti, and then she does things like a Lamington cake instead of individual Lamingtons, and these fun things like these strawberry and clotted cream shortcake cupcakes, which are just like a cupcake, but they've got a sandwich biscuit in the base of them. Like
a Jammy Dodger.
They're like a little vanilla sandwich ones. Oh. I think Foxes do some. I've wanted to make them so many times, but specifically the occasions I've only ever come up with you or my good friend Louise, both of whom are fucking allergic to strawberries. So I'm always like, oh, maybe I'll make those things. No, they look so beautiful. I saw her make them on the TV show and they just look incredible. The first impressions of this book are like, ooh, that's interesting. That's interesting. That's it.
Yes.
Like, she does something with like, a sag paneer spanakopita kind of thing.
Yes, that looks great. Or
making...
She does like a chic kebab toad in the hole, right?
Love that. Yeah, so that is my catnip. I love that stuff when it's just like something classic but a bit weird where you just really want to taste it.
Yes.
What did you think?
Yeah, the same. Like, it's so, there's so many, I felt like there's so many like, recipes.
Yes. Yeah.
That looks fun, that looks fun. And I like that there's savoury recipes in there as well.
Yes.
I also watched a lot of the TV show, which is on iPlayer if you're in the UK, and I think on Netflix if you're not.
Oh, really?
Nadia Bakes, yeah. Which is, it's fun. It's not all the recipes on the show, but like some of her, it goes as the chapters go. So it's like celebration bakes, tart, like biscuits and bites.
Yes.
So there's like chicken curry donuts, which look great.
Those look insane. I really wish that she had a veggie version of that.
Yeah.
I don't know what you would do that would fucking mushrooms or something that someone would say. Oh, God.
Fucking mushrooms. Just punched my microphone over there. Fucking mushrooms.
And I've made a couple of things from here that, you know, I don't know at what point to talk about them. But like, obviously I've made things for the podcast, but I've made things previous to the podcast cooking as well, which were interesting. Like, I made the Florentines before. They're really good.
Oh, you love a Florentine, don't you?
I bloody love a Florentine.
Are they the ones that are like, they're half dipped in chocolate? And, yeah.
They're ginger and almond. That's it. I love a Florentine because I like crunchy things. Crunch, crunch, crunch.
All right.
I've also made a Christmas a couple of years ago. I think it was 2020 Christmas, which was bleak for many reasons. But the cranberry and chili brioche wreath thing, where you have like a whole camembert in the middle, and then you make these little bread rolls with their brioche rolls with cranberry and chili, and you put them around it and you bake it like that, and then you dip the bread in, and that's really fun.
Yeah, that looks great. I mean, not my jam because of the cheese, but it looks great.
I'm still struggling to make these jokes today. There's something in there about jam and cheese, but
jam
I didn't
and cheese
quite get there.
Cheese and chutney. Chutney, a great name for a cat or dog, by the way. Possibly our next cat will be called Chutney, I feel.
Are you disappointed that I didn't give dog a food name?
No, I think that what is true is that I saw this tweet once that was like, food names are the best for cats and old man names are best for dogs. And I feel like that is incredibly true.
That's so good. My brother-in-law has joked before about naming a dog like Paul.
Yeah.
Which I
Dave.
Gary. I just think that would be so fun. Yeah. Keith. I mean, he was... Did you say Keith?
Keith the dog, yeah.
Brian. Brian's the Family Guy dog. He was pickled before he came to me, but it was a bit too cutesy for me, sadly.
Yeah. What did you make? This time.
What
for the
did
podcast.
I make? For the podcast. Oh, also I should tell you about the fail that I had from this a while back. This was pre-podcast too. It was my friend Emmy's birthday. And I tried to make the mango and coconut yogurt cake with German buttercream.
Which looks amazing. She makes it on the show as well.
Amazing. And it just failed hard. The middle of the cake just like didn't bake. It was in there for ages. It was all just really dense and uncooked, and it just all went wrong, and I ended up having to pick up like a Colin the Caterpillar on the way instead of the cake that I wanted to bring. I don't know, I can't remember specifically what exactly went wrong, but yeah, I was a bit scarred by that one. Maybe I need to come back to that one at some point. But the first thing I made was a tomato galette.
Ooh!
Tomato. We like tomatoes. I really think we need to get our matching tomato tattoos soon.
Yes. Tomato tattoo. I feel like
Do you know why I made this? Was because, I don't. Well, it was
enlightenly.
It was the end of summer and tomatoes were still good. You know, we like a good tomato.
Tomato Claxon.
And it's kind of weird. It's kind of weird, the combination of in here. So you make the pastry with a galette, which has chickpea flour, by the way.
She loves a chickpea flour.
She really does. A gram flour. Also, by the way, fucking hell, we get ripped off in mainstream supermarkets here. If you go to any like little Indian shop or Asian shop, you can buy a massive bag of gram flour for £1. And then in the supermarket, it was like some fucking organic chickpea flour bullshit that was like £2.70 or something for a really small bag.
It's like when you buy like red lentils as like the, you know, the supermarket branded ones, they're like £4, but you just go to the Asian aisle and it's like £1 for like 4 kilograms of red lentils.
Yeah, it's like a comfortable tax. We pay just to feel like not alarmed by the food that we're buying.
Yeah.
Anyway, so yeah, the pastry has combination of plain flour and chickpea flour, butter, cold water. But the filling then that you spread all over the pastry when you make it has like hummus as the base.
Oh.
And then there's sweet corn on there, there's capers, basil, cherry tomatoes, 3 anchovies. There's a lot of weird
exactly
things.
Three.
Yeah.
Wow.
I went out and fished them myself. And so I was just kind of like, I want to give this a go to understand what it tastes like. The pastry is a crumbly little sucker. Again, I keep seeming to... I get why people are put off by making pastry, because a lot of the time it's just a bit of a dick, and it depends on the recipe, right? But she does warn you that it is a crumbly pastry. But anyway, you just kind of, it's classic. You just mix the butter in with the flour and then add cold water in and mix until it starts to come together. Put it in cling film and in the fridge. And then you make the filling, which is you fry off some garlic and anchovies. You kind of mush the anchovies so that they're broken down. And then you put in the tomatoes with with smoked paprika, which I really feel makes this whole thing. The smoked paprika is great. You add tamarind paste then, but I didn't have any and I was in a rush, so I left that out.
That shit is so hard to find.
That is really
unless you have an Asian shop, but yeah.
We might need an Asian shop Claxon for this show as well, the number of times we talk about them. You put in the sweet corn and you kind of cook it until it's like pretty dry. Take that off the heat. Then you roll out your pastry. It can be a bit rough. It doesn't need to be like a perfect circle. And then you spread out. Once you have your circle of pastry, you spread the hummus in the center.
You make the hummus?
No, you just buy it. Right. What's our favorite bought hummus?
Sabra.
Sabra, baby.
Sabra, that's... the fancy one with the pine nuts and the olive oil on top.
So good.
Pine nut Claxon.
Spread that all over. Then you put your kind of tomato sweet corn mixture on top. And then you kind of fold your pastry over the edges, but it's open on top, obviously. She says it's quite a brittle dough, so you may find it cracks. It does, Nadia. It really does. And, you know, I cracked as well, trying to, like, fold it all over. Put it on a heated tray so that the base is nice and crispy. And then when it's out, you bake it for, like, 25, 30 minutes. When it's out, you scatter over some capers and basil. And that's it. And you kind of slice it up like a little tart. And it was nice. It was nice, but kind of weird. Like, I feel like hummus is weird, you know. It gets used in places it shouldn't really be. I trusted Nadia, but you know, didn't I send you something that was like a hummus pasta or something? Just stop. That's not what it was made for.
No. It like warm hummus is not the one. It's a bit like warm avocado. Like there's a time and a place and this isn't it probably.
And the pastry, because it was quite tricky to work with, I felt like I left it a little bit thicker than it should have been. And it was nice. It was nice. It was just a bit strange. It was just a little bit funny. I don't know if it did it for me. Like I said, I really feel the smoked paprika made a huge funny. The tomato galette. Because it's got hummus. Not a lot else. Yeah, so I liked it enough to eat it, but I don't know if I would make it again.
I have a theory about this book.
Okay.
And this may become a bit clearer when we talk about my bakes, if you can call them that. that she gets these books out pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And they have a TV show. I don't know if the recipes have been tested to their full potential by other people.
Yeah.
Because they're written so quickly. And I think there are some steps, explanations, recipes that just don't quite work because mm-hmm. nobody's gone through them with a fine tooth comb. Because I think they probably want to get it out as quick as possible.
That's interesting. And I mean, we would go to town on someone like Jamie Oliver for that.
Yes. So
I think we have to keep that in mind. But I think I agree. The next thing I made worked out fairly well. But yeah, I mean, definitely that buttercream cake that I made before, I remember being really confused as to why it had gone wrong. It felt like the proportions were off, I think. And then...
Yeah. And I that's it. I feel like I haven't cooked enough of her recipes to...
Yeah.
To call it.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it's just the ones I pick. I mean, we'll talk about me in a minute, but tell us about your second one.
The second thing I made was the rose harissa rugelach.
Ooh, rugelach.
Rugelach. So I've always wanted to make rugelach, which I don't know if I'm saying it right, but get used to it.
I don't know if I've ever eaten one. Like, I always see them in, you know, various, usually American books. And like, are they supposed to be crunchy, crispy? Are they? Yeah.
Anyway. Yeah. Is it a Jewish thing? I think maybe.
Yeah. I think so.
So yeah, I remember seeing them first on that blog. I really like Smitten Kitchen. She did some, but I think historically they're always sweet, which was why I was interested to see this with rose harissa. And from my understanding, it's almost like it looks like a croissant, right? Like it's that shape, but it's like a biscuity pastry dough, so it's like crunchier. This, I really like this, and this cream cheese in the dough, which is weird, but. I think that's quite a big thing in like some American or like Jewish American baking. You make the harissa for this. I didn't make it a rose harissa because you had to have 10 heads of organic roses, petals removed.
You don't have those knocking around?
No, it's a cost of living crisis. And to be honest, I don't love rose harissa anyway. Like I don't like rose.
Yeah.
Rose and like orange blossom water and all those they belong in potpourri. So you make the harissa, which is coriander seeds, cumin seeds, fennel seeds, chili flakes, 2 whole bulbs of garlic, a red onion, and a big red pepper.
Lots of all the red vegetables.
Yes, and you kind of blitz everything together in a blender, and then you cook it off in a pan. And until it's like dry, rich and thick, which is basically me. No, I'm dry, poor and thick right now.
The kind of man that I want.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Now that I felt like it did go quite dry. I don't know if I overcooked it a little bit. It was quite crumbly, but anyway, it still worked. And then you make the pastry for the rigelac. So that you do in a food processor, you blitz the flour, butter until you have big clumps, and then you add cream cheese and you whisk it into a large, or whiz it until it comes together in a large bowl, and then you chill that dough for like an hour, and then you roll that dough out into kind of six big strips, I think, go across the strips to make them into big long triangles, and so you have 12 triangles all together. Sorry, I should have said that you spread the harissa over before you cut them into the triangles, and then you just roll them up from the widest part of the base up towards the point, and that's it. You just kind of put them apart. You're meant to chill them for 30 minutes before you put them in the oven, and you just beat them. No, beat them. Just beat them.
Naughty rugelach.
It's like you beating up your microphone earlier with the fucking mushroom. You brush them with some beaten egg and a little black pepper, and then you bake them until they're a nice golden brown.
These sound great.
They're great. Really, really like them. It was quite spicy, the harissa. So, you know, if you don't like spice, maybe cut down the chili flakes in that, because I think that was... Yeah, they're great. My picture of these is horrendous because I took a picture as they came out of the oven, and then I was like, oh, I'll get a better one in the daylight tomorrow, and then just like proceeded to eat them all.
Nice.
So it's like almost like a short crust pastry texture, and then you've got the spiciness, and I think you could just have so much fun playing around with the different fillings in there. I don't know, you know, if you're like a pesto fan, maybe you could do some fresh pesto in there or something, and like sprinkle some cheese on top. I just love that she's taken a sweet thing and made them savory, and I like them a lot. So they were good. They were the two things that I made.
Fun. They do sound great. And it sounded like that one worked. I didn't see that one. I felt like I combed through this book to find what I wanted to make. And then I was looking through it before we recorded, and I was like, oh, I didn't see that recipe. And I don't remember seeing that recipe. There's a lot of recipes in here.
Yeah, a huge amount.
Which is why I feel like I want to give her the benefit of the doubt for my disasters.
Okay. Let's move on to your disasters. I want to hear.
No, they're not disasters. No, because, well, one isn't a surprise, because Hannah was actually there. When she came to visit me, I'd made one of my bakes for Nadia, which was fun. So it's not a surprise. Yes. So that was the salmon and dill stuffed focaccia.
Yes. Vic apologised profusely because there's dill in it, which there's is obviously...
I put less dill than was requested. Well, you can say how you felt about this. I'll talk about it, and then because obviously you got to eat it, which was fun. So this sounds amazing, because everybody knows, we love focaccia on this little show. So I was really excited, and I've never had a stuffed focaccia before, apart from you know, like making a sandwich out of it.
Calling something a stuffed focaccia, it sounds a bit rude. It sounds like, go stuff your focaccia and forget about it.
Yes. Also, she uses clarified butter, ghee, instead of oil.
Yes, that is interesting.
Throughout. So there's no olive oil in the focaccia, and then there's like a drizzle that you make, a garlic drizzle that you make, and it's all ghee, baby.
The Italians, it's all ghee. The Italians, I'd love to see how the Italians would feel about that. There needs to be a TikTok of an Italian reacting to that.
Yeah, but then also, you know, how are the you know, East Coast Jewish people are reacting to the harissa
rugelach.
I feel like she's, you know, she's coming at it from all angles, but we appreciate it. It's very standard in terms of the dough for the focaccia. So it's flour, ghee, salt, yeast, water. You kind of... What?
I'm so sorry.
What?
Ghee is a really rude word in Ireland.
Oh, what does it mean?
Like a lady part. Oh. And it's really hard for us to talk about.
I'll say clarified butter.
Okay.
She uses clarified butter in the recipe.
Maybe she
that's
knows.
Why.
When you know, you know.
When you know, you know. Yes, so you kind of crumble the ghee. What do you call that?
Yeah, I just rub it into the
flour. Yeah, rub. Rub is the... rub your ghee into... oh my goodness. Yes, you rub the clarified butter into the flour and then add, you know, everything else in. And then you just knead it in. She says to do it in a KitchenAid for like 10 minutes until it's elastic. And then you kind of, you leave it to... what is the word? Prove in the bowl.
Yeah.
Dublin size. And then you put it in a pan. And like, you know, as you do with the focaccia, like push it out. She says to put, so oil the pan. So she says oil the pan and then add a little bit of semolina, which is interesting. Oh. For the bottom, like pizza-y style.
Yeah.
So you push it out and then what you then do is on half of the focaccia is add smoked salmon, dill and some black pepper.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're supposed to, well, you do, you fold over the one side.
Yeah.
So it's like a sandwich. So that stuff is encased and you put the dough back in the middle and then do your pushing motion to get it out.
Right.
Leave it to prove again in the pan till it's doubled in size and then pop it in the oven to bake. What you then do, like whilst that's proving, you make the drizzle, she calls it, which is you use your clarified butter, more clarified butter in a pan, and you heat it until it's almost, well, until it's just smoking, and then you add a load of cut up garlic to it, take it off the heat immediately, and then that kind of sizzles and browns the garlic, and then you just kind of leave that to infuse. So that's nice and easy.
Yeah, that is nice.
When it's golden brown and cooked from the oven, you, oh no, before you bake it, sorry, you put the drizzle on.
Yeah.
But leave the garlic crispies that they've crisped up. And then when it's out the oven, you sprinkle...
the lesser popular cereal. Stink, crackle and pop.
Very funny. Thank you.
Thanks.
And then you, when it comes out the oven, salt and the crispies on the top. And that's it. So it's basically a sandwich, a baked sandwich, but with smoked salmon. Interesting choice, in my opinion, to cook smoked salmon.
Exactly. What else are you going to do, though, I guess, right?
Yeah. So it was nice. Mm-hmm. I think the clarified butter, garlic butter thing is delicious. Like, it's... sounds and is delicious on top. I mean, it could have been fine with normal butter as well, but thought that was nice. I think it felt like, to me, there wasn't enough filling.
Yes.
And that may have been because, as we know...
you didn't put enough filling.
I didn't put enough filling. No, we like a chunky focaccia in this house, on this show. So it says to make it in like quite a big... pan, like a 23 centimeter I think pan, and I was like, I don't want to make a thin focaccia. Nobody wants a thin I don't want a thin focaccia.
No,
but I feel like that meant the filling got
lost.
And I think when I first saw it and it said stuffed, what I should have known is it would have been stuffed, like all the filling in one place. But what I imagined in my head was maybe that like the smoked salmon was like flaked throughout the dough and the dill, and then so you would get a mouthful of, you know, garlicky, salmony, dilly bread.
Yeah. Dilly. What, I mean, what's to stop you making, why do we think that recipe is not just make some focaccia and use it to make a sandwich with smoked salmon?
Because that's, I guess that's not a recipe, is it?
No, I know.
A sandwich is not. But yeah, I know what you mean. I feel like she should suggest that as a filling.
Yeah. I just think it could have benefited from, I thought it tasted really good. And I thought actually dill, when it's cooked, loses some of its vileness. So that was dill-ness. Nice. You know, I thought it tasted good, but I think you were right. The proportions were slightly off. It was, it felt like not enough filling, but I think it would be better if it was something that benefits from being cooked, from being baked, or, you know,
chicken, or
you're not a cheesy person, but like a cheese would be great in there or something like that.
Because I guess it's like a, you know, you take on a picnic or whatever and it you don't have to build it. But yeah, I think you're right. The smoked salmon also loses its nice smoked salmon essence when it's cooked, and I feel like it just made everything with the garlic oil, and obviously it's an oily bread. It's all a bit oily, you know?
Yeah.
Which I love in a focaccia generally, but then you've got like the fishy, I don't know. It was nice flavours. But yeah, I think that maybe something throughout the bread might have been nice. You know, like how you put like olives through a bread. I feel like that would have the same.
I agree.
And but I like the topping, and I like that it was made with ghee that didn't.
Yeah.
Sorry, clarified fun. Butter. And it didn't. That didn't make it bad or.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, and again, that might have been my fault for making it in a smaller volume pan to make it puffy rather than like thin, and it bigger. Would have been it would have had more filling for your bite.
That's true.
But I stand by what I did, because I think, what's the point in having a thin focaccia?
No, go stuff your focaccia.
Go stuff your focaccia. It's gonna make a anyway. So my second thing that I cooked was a fucking disaster.
We love them though.
We love them. Hannah got a picture of this, and it all slopped in a bag at the end.
I still don't know what it was though, or what it was meant
nor
to
do
be.
I so this was this is my punishment for trying things. I should just
stay in your lane, mate. Just stay, do not leave that comfort zone.
Comfort. Make cupcakes and be done with it. Anyway, orange and lemongrass meringue pie.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Doesn't it sound lovely? Don't you wish that I could have eaten it and tasted it? Because
oh my gosh! Please tell me everything.
Okay.
This is when you need that James A. Castor meme, right? Like, started to bake it.
Started making it. Had a breakdown. Bon appetit. Hilariously, I have a really good photo of it.
Oh.
Because I'm really good at hiding my disasters. And then the moment you moved it, it poured orange and lemongrass curd all over my kitchen table, and it's still not recovered.
Wow.
Here's my explanation. There's three parts to this: the base, the curd, the meringue. I managed to make the base.
Okay.
Because what it is whizzed up
biscuits.
Frosties.
Oh.
Cereal.
Garlicky.
Frosted cornflakes. Yeah. Garlic crispies and butter. So I managed that. So you whizz up a load of frosties. Yeah.
Sweet,
and add butter. And then you push it into your pie tin and bon appetit. Put it in the fridge to set and cool. Fine.
Yeah.
Easy.
That.
So your next job is a curd, orange and lemongrass. Doesn't that sound lovely?
Lovely.
I was like, that's great. Did I go to five different shops trying to find fucking lemongrass? Yes. Found it. Fine. So you need like 200 mils of orange juice, and then the zest of two oranges.
Okay.
She says you need the juice from two oranges, but it took me like four to get that much.
Right.
200 mils of juice out.
They're dry little oranges.
Yeah.
Thick, rich, and dry.
All pulp. I cut myself twice on the zester. And anyway.
Grating and zesting. Grating. If I never see a grater again. I just finished a wedding cake this morning. Never again. And the base is carrot cake, which I thought would be great. I had to grate.
Wait.
I had to grate over like over a kilo of carrots. I honestly knew.
How much of your knuckles made it into that wedding cake?
There's a little bit of me in there for you guys.
My blood sweat.
Happily ever after. Sorry.
That's grim. Yes, so a curd. So it's orange juice from oranges, the zest, four lemongrass sticks. You kind of like bash them to get the flavours out, chop them. Yeah, you beat them up. 25 grams of corn flour, 250 grams of caster sugar, and six large egg yolks. Please note, there's no butter in that.
Which emulsified.
So off I went, making my curd, put all the ingredients in, as she says, add the corn flour, sugar, egg yolks and stir everything together. It would be lumpy and not look great at this point, but pop it into the hob on the lowest heat. Mix till you have a smooth curd that coats the back of the spoon. Well.
That ever happened.
Off I went.
Started out bright-eyed and optimistic.
Yeah. I was like, this curd's going to be lovely. I'm going to take this cake to my neighbours. They're going to love it. An hour and a half later. So this was also hilarious. This isn't funny. I should take the word hilariously. This was the day... I started making this the day the Queen died. Oh. And I was downstairs in the kitchen.
Still not finished by the funeral.
Yeah. Honestly, and I couldn't bear it anymore, the radio or whatever. So I was listening to a podcast about 9/11 to even myself out. And I listened to basically this whole podcast series, and my curd was still not thick. Added an extra egg yolk to try and add a little bit of butter to try and get it there. Nothing seemed to be happening. So I was like, you know what? It's thickening a little bit. I was trying to read on the internet. I messaged Hannah and I was like, what can I do to this fucking curd? Because I'm not going to go and find more lemon. I'm not going to do this again.
No,
it's not happening again.
No.
So I was reading it about the internet and it's like, look, it's going to thicken after you cool it. So I was like, fuck it. It was like midnight by this point. I was like, I'm going to put it in the fridge overnight and we'll go again tomorrow. We'll put it back on the heat. We'll
live to fight another day.
Thicken it up. Yes. And so the next day, that's what we did. Put it on the heat. So that it thickened up a little bit overnight in the fridge. And I was like, okay, I feel positive about this. Put it on the heat. Felt like it was thickening up a little bit. It was like coating. It wasn't coating the back of the spoon, but it was sticking to the back of the spoon. So I was like, you know what? I can't do this anymore.
Yeah, job's a good one.
This has been, I'll put it back in the, I'll leave it to cool, because you have to leave it to cool, strain it, because it's got all the...
Lemongrass.
Like, lemongrass in it. Strain it so it's nice and smooth. Leave it to cool completely, then put it in your Frosties base.
Yes.
Yeah. Fine.
Fine.
Did that. I was like, right, put it in the fridge. Maybe it'll set, and we won't have a disaster on our hands. So did that. And so then was on to the meringue. It's an Italian meringue.
Oh,
I don't have a sugar thermometer.
Yeah.
So I was like, I can do this without a sugar thermometer. It'll be fine. And to be fair, the meringue was almost fine.
Yeah.
Like it was a bit, I got the sugar and water to a point where I thought it was probably hot enough, based on what I was reading about how to get there. It's very bubbly.
Yeah.
My egg whites were nice, and I think that maybe I over mixed my egg whites.
Right.
It was a bit, it probably wasn't as like stiff,
yeah,
but it looked great. So I put that on the top of my thing. So that's when I got my nice picture, put it in the oven to like grill it off. So it looks great. And
he's just the floodgates open,
because you're supposed to take. I think before you put the curd in, you're supposed to take it out of your pie pan. But I was absolutely not fucking around with that. Like, you say, your base is supposed to hold it together. And I was like, no, I'm not confident enough for that. So I let it stayed in the pie. And so I put the meringue on. And then, like, slowly but surely, it was like one of those, you know, those Dominique Ansel or whatever it is, or those French hot chocolates where the milk just goes so the meringue was just slowly like melting into my curd, and like you move it and it was like whoosh whoosh whoosh, and it was just, you could see it, and I was like, I guess I'll try and cut into it, you know, see how it goes.
At that point you're just like, I've had so many of those, and you're just like, oh come on, let's see, it could be funny.
Yeah, like maybe it's delicious nonetheless.
Yeah, delicious soup.
Because it's, yeah. And so that, then there was sticky orange and lemongrass curd all over my kitchen table, oozing. And it was very difficult for me to clean that up. Days later, it was very sticky. So I was like, I, you know, in a rage.
Throughout the table.
Not a rage, but I was just like, yeah. I burnt this house to the ground. Now I'm homeless. And I still don't have a pie.
What is it, a curd or is it a custard? If it's just sugar, corn flour, egg yolks, citrus fruit, like, that's not a curd. They don't do not yes. a curd make.
Hey, that didn't occur to me at the time. occurred to me. So I don't know, Hannah. I don't know what happened. I don't know if that's because in the picture
it looks a bit oozy.
Of her picture. It's oozy, but it's thick, right?
I didn't realise when you were asking me. So I didn't know that this was the recipe that Vic had made. There's one for a tahini cake with a banana curd at the start of the book. Mm. And I thought that's what you were trying to make, but I didn't ask. And I thought that's mental, like that, the banana curd, you know, maybe it's just not working out because there's no citrus or something. But she doesn't have, she has butter in that curd. Maybe it's a typo or something.
Yeah. But in the recipe, it doesn't say butter. Yeah, but maybe it's an oversight. That's what I was thinking. Like, because yeah. all the recipes online had butter.
Because you need to make an emulsion.
Hannah and I went into this big conversation after this about how, you know, we want to revolutionise curd.
Yeah.
And how you could kind of, you know, make it the next big thing. And how do you make a vegan curd? Anyway, so I feel very disheartened by this because I really wanted to eat it. And doesn't orange and lemongrass sound lovely? Great, yeah. And, you know, it's a fun little base with the frosties and, you know. So I feel a bit upset about it. And I wonder if it is a... and frankly, my situation with this... Because she says prep, 30 minutes plus chilling. What? 30 minutes? I spent at least 3 hours trying to make that fucking curd.
Yeah.
Plus overnight chilling. So I think, again, I don't know if it's like a testing error or, you know, there's some like filler recipes and I've accidentally picked one of those.
Yeah.
Or like you say, it's a typo because there's no butter. I don't know what it is, but this kind of put a whole downer on this book for me and I feel quite sad about it.
Yeah, don't blame you.
But like I've got a great picture of it. And
that's all that matters.
But I am not discouraged from curd in general. And I've got some good ideas about... I would like to try this. You know, I probably won't try the meringue again without a thermometer. But maybe I'll buy myself a thermometer.
Does it discourage you from Nadia, though? It doesn't discourage you from curd, but does it discourage you from Nadia?
I think for the foreseeable, I might give Nadia's baking recipes a wide berth. Yeah. However, I think some of her... Because I was watching a little bit of her new series and the Everyday Bakes thing. And I had a quick flick. I was in the supermarket the other day through that new book, which looks very similar to this book, like aesthetic wise. And I was, is it bad to say that I was a bit disappointed? Like she's got like Dalgona coffee cake in there. So it's all a bit like, you know,
what coffee cake?
On the, you know, that coffee that went viral during lockdown where you like Korean coffee, like you mix you like whisk instant coffee with milk is it and like you make a really thick thing.
Oh right, and... okay, missed that one.
Yeah, so she has like that coffee kit and there was something else and I was like, I feel like this is all a bit like, you know, the same thing that I slagged Alison Romanoff for, like trying to be a meme and to do popular things, but I think some of her like savory dishes that you see on her other shows look absolutely incredible. That like she also on the Off Menu podcast, which we talk about forever, she talks about this korma that she makes and it takes like 3 days.
Oh yeah.
And it's the curry that they give to their kids when they're like their first curry that they give to kids and they're weaning and her kids like lose their shit if it's in her fridge because it has to like sit for 3 days. I'm like, I would love to make that. I think that's in her first book.
Right.
She has like, what is it, like Nadia's Family Feast,
yes,
where she like fries puff pastry instead of using paratha. That's right. I think that's brilliant. Yeah.
Some of it's inspired and some of it's just a bit hit and miss in general, I think.
Yes. which I think is, as like you say, we would slag Jamie Oliver off for it. And I think, as is the way that this, the publishing of these books works, that it's not, they're not all going to be big hitter recipes in the same way as maybe Mira or someone has the time and the,
to meticulously and the testers. Test,
I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah. I mean, we can rage, but I think, I just think it's hit and miss. I think there's some gems, and I think there's some stuff that's just not worked for whatever reason. And, you know, she's a very experienced baker, and this is the problem with some people just take that for granted, right? They can look at something and know that it's not right, whereas, you know, we, reading a cookbook, need explicit, you know, instructions and so on. So,
and I think that's it. I think sometimes she's really explicit about her instructions. And sometimes it feels like there's stuff cut out.
Yeah, it's not.
Like, it should tell me how long I need to heat that curd for.
Yeah. Curd, though. Or what? God, honestly, everyone lies about curds. Everyone lies about caramelizing onions and everyone lies about curds.
Curd, yeah.
I remember making my first one with my sister Naomi, actually. It was for the Bake Off blog, and you had to make, like, a lemon curd, the Bake Off blog that I did. And then I was there for ages stirring. And like, I think it was a Mary Berry recipe, and it said, like, to do it for 15 minutes or something. Bullshit. And I was like, it's not coming together. And thankfully, Naomi's always, like, talking me down off the baking ledge. And she was like, no, just keep going, turn up the heat a little bit. And it came together then. But it was just, like, it was a barefaced lie. A berry-faced lie.
Is there anything on your list to cook from here?
Well, that tahini cake with banana curd does sound wild, and I just love tahini, as we know. The sag paneer spanakopita, the cheat sourdough sounds interesting, but it still takes a day, so I kind of feel like, no, I don't know about that. I could just make sourdough. There's a few things, yeah, for sure. Honey cake. I've always wanted to make one of those layered honey cakes that looks beautiful.
Yes, that she make. Did you watch the TV show of her making that?
No,
it's amazing. It looked amazing. I guess that's a good, like, celebration thing. I'm sure it's in the celebration section.
What about you? When you're ready to come back to it?
More of her savory stuff, like those chicken donuts I thought looked great.
Yeah,
I only saw this morning the carrot tart, which is like a pumpkin pie,
yes,
with like pumpkin spices, which I think could be fun, because, you know, and what I wish I'd made instead of that, you know, looking back, she has these like lemon iced buns, and I've been thinking about lemon iced buns because Paul Hollywood talked about them on his off menu, about, you know, lemon icing with lemon curd, and so I would have still had to make a fucking curd maybe. And she has lemon ice buns in here, and I should have just made those, so I'd like to try those. She made iced buns in the final of Bake Off.
That would never happen now. They'd have to be like ice buns that do the fucking tango or something. It's just like
tango ice buns, sponsored by Tango. Although they made red velvet cake this week in episode.
I might watch that.
But
today.
Maybe that's an easy one. But yeah, that was their like blind bake. Anyway, yes. Should we rate?
Let's rate. I will talk you through our rating system.
Please.
As we know, I struggle with this every episode, and I haven't pulled up the sheet that has all five on them. So
I believe in you.
Say it with me.
You can do it.
Every episode, we rate the cookbooks out of five criteria. Those criteria are usability and accessibility. That's one. Ingredients used. That's another. Aesthetics.
That's also one.
That's a third one. Veggie friendliness. And Inspirability. We change what we rate out of based on the chef or the book or something that comes up again and again and again. So for Nadia, because she loves to kind of mess around with the classics and put her own take on them, we're going to rate out of twists. Twists on the classics.
Chocolate twists, not chocolate twists.
Cheese twists. So, cheese everything. Don't bury me in cheese. How many twists are you giving this out of five, Victoria? Pray tell.
Well, Hannah.
I can see you're having an internal battle on this. The love of Nadia versus the book.
Yeah, I know. And we always say this, don't we? You know, we're rating the book, not the chef.
Yeah.
So Nadia gets 5 everythings out of 5 for me. But this book does not, unfortunately. So usability and accessibility. I'm actually giving that 1/2.
Okay.
Because I think, you know, I fucked up. I didn't manage to do the best.
Yeah.
And I, like I said, I think that there's some instructions that aren't quite clear. And a lot of, you know, as is shown by her then releasing an everyday baking book, which I'm sure is like easier. That means
true.
That she, yeah.
Yeah, that's
this
true.
Is for more experienced bakers, and I don't think that's made clear. So 1/2.
Mm-hmm.
Ingredients, yeah, 1, easy, generally easy to find. You know, I found lemongrass in the end.
Yeah.
I don't think there's anything really
wild.
Yeah. No. Aesthetics, yeah, I think it's beautiful. The pictures are gorgeous.
Yeah, they really are.
There's not pictures for everything, which is, you know, sad, but also that it would be a giant book because there's so many recipes in here.
So many.
Veggie friendly, yes. And I guess it's also worth mentioning that she does not eat like pork or drink. So all the recipe, there's recipes for like virgin mojito
possets.
Possets, yeah, that's it. Yeah.
Fucking posset. Sorry, when we worked in the pub, we... I hated posset. We would get it in staff food sometimes. So every time you say posset now, you have to say fucking posset.
Yeah,
that's
such a fucking posset. Yeah. Fucking possums. it's very veggie friendly. There is meat in here, like you said, like about the chicken donuts.
Yeah.
But it's not. It's not.
Yeah, there's
some vegan stuff in there as well, isn't there? Vegan.
Yeah, there is.
Stuff. I think, and then inspirability. I'm not giving it a point because I do. I know because they're. I think just because I feel so disheartened. I mean, ask me in 6 months' time and see if I've gone back to it. I mean, don't.
Yeah.
You don't have to put that in your diary or anything. But just feel a bit disheartened about it. And I feel, you know, it's my self-esteem's taken a hit that I couldn't manage it. And it ended up in the bin. And it was such an effort.
Yeah.
And
that's not nice.
So it's 3.5 from me. 3.5 twists.
Out of 5.
A twisty road that we went on there for me. How about you?
A rocky road.
Not sure there's the rocky road recipe in here, but there might be.
There is, but there? I can't remember. There's some twist on it, as you would guess. There's mashed potato flatbreads with egg butter in here, which are very intriguing to me, but I never have, you know, I don't. Anyway. Usability and accessibility, I'm going to give it 1. Ingredients use, I'm going to give it 1/2 because just things like tamarind paste and stuff like that can be a bit hard to find.
Tamarind paste is dead. I know I did that last episode as well.
It's okay, we can have
a
one
broken fucking record. I am. I'm far fired from this show.
Definitely, I think it's really beautiful, and I it's the cover is lovely, and it's kind of like pink and rose gold throughout. It's lovely. I was going to give it 1/2, weirdly, because obviously there's loads of veggie-friendly stuff in here, but the savoury stuff is quite meaty. Mm. And I just, like I said, some of the exciting stuff like that, toad in the hole or the donuts, I would love just a suggestion of, you know, a veggie alternative for that, because they sound really fun and I can't think of what else would work in there. But anyway... Yeah, maybe I'm being a bit brutal, but it's going to happen. And then inspirability, I'm giving it 1. So I'm giving it 4 twists out of 5. Let's twist again. Like we did last summer.
Like we did last
book.
Cookbook. I think I would recommend people go and watch the show as well, because I feel like maybe those recipes are well tested, the ones that she talks about on there, like the honey cake and various other fun bits and pieces.
Isn't it weird how on the cover it says based on a BBC program? Usually the program is based on the book, isn't it?
Yeah, that's true.
Anyway, telling. Interesting.
Rather interesting.
I think we should tell that story, actually. One of my favourite stories from Vic and I working together that is completely unrelated to the cookbook circle is that we were in quite a serious, quiet training session. And...
With our, like, design team.
With our design team. And Vix, someone was in the middle of like a long presentation about, you know, the best practice for something, and Vix's phone, which she was holding in her hand, just spontaneously piped up the like Siri equivalent and just said, "Rather interesting."
Oh my, it was so embarrassing.
I thought I was gonna lose my life. I've never laughed that hard. It was so funny. Rather interesting.
It's not so catchy. Thought that we were talking to it. Thought that we were asking. We were telling. But my it was Google. My Google thought that we were telling it something, and it was like rather interesting, and it was so embarrassing. Nobody else thought it was funny.
No.
Everyone thought I was being very rude to the people presenting. If I wasn't, and I didn't have time to explain myself, and I've never shown myself at work since.
I could not wait to get back to our desk to tell everybody. Anyway, next book.
Rather. But when you hear us say that, that's the reason why.
I can't believe it's taken this many episodes to come out. Next book is exciting.
Yes, it's different. It's not a baking book.
It's not. It's young and fresh and cool and hip. Very exciting. And new, like shiny new. Easter Belfrage.
Easter Belfrage. Mezcla. Which is exciting. Yeah, very new. You've probably seen it all over your
faces.
Instagram, various, all over your faces. It's like orange and pink and sexy and like me actually when I'm wearing fake tan.
Like what? A brunch. Ice cream.
Like Doug's balls.
I'm going to have to leave you in that bit now about Doug's balls, aren't I? Oh, look at him, he's so cute. Yes, we're excited about this one. And I think, you know, this is a relatively new addition to our list because we've just been seeing so much about it. But we've also seen some of the recipes that are in there and it just looked too interesting to not discuss. So we're excited about it.
It's fascinating. I'm thrilled.
I'm thrilled. We can't wait to talk about it with you next time, our friends.
Yes. Thank you for listening to our Nadia episode. Nadia, if you're listening, we love you. Thank you for existing. I'm sorry that I fucked up your curd.
Nadia, I think if you are listening, you need to tell us if there's meant to be butter in that curd. That's my question.
Yes. I may write to your publisher. To find out.
Yeah.
That's what people do, right?
Normal people.
I've got loads of time on my hands.
Yeah. Write out that letter and put a stamp on it. Thank you for listening. We love you very much.
If you love what we do and you'd like to support us further, please have a look at our Patreon page. You get all sorts of extra fun things and more of our episodes.
More of this
chat, more but of less. This. Less structured. And we'll see you next time.
Bye. Thank you. Bye. Thanks so much for listening to this episode of the Cookbook Circle. If you enjoyed it, please do subscribe and leave us a review as it helps others to find us. You can see how recipes from this episode turned out on our Instagram at Cookbook Circle. And if you make anything from the books we talk about, don't forget to tag us. See you next time. Bye.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.